Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 36. Between the Bylines, or How I Learned to Surf the Web and Learn Some Shit. Ago, started really getting online on the computer, and sort of a evolutionary process of reading news and researching, and over the years kind of really got into it and developed, I suppose, a knack for finding articles or writers and sharing them with friends. And when they appreciated it, I realized, you know, the value of it. So it's become kind of a routine part of the day and part of my education process. So this show is sharing some of that in the hopes that it, you know, you learn something and it encourages you to explore topics that you might want to learn more about and find out what's going on in the world and what you can do. This is an amazing time we're living in, and watching the transition from the printed newspaper to the online news, and also with the videos and all that. So it's really an exciting time, and that's another aspect of the show, is kind of learning one's way online and how you can, some suggestions about how you can go about it. There's lots of ways to go about it, and I certainly don't presume to know it all, but just want to share a perspective. And this is your host, Monk. Thanks for listening. Sometimes when I've shared news bits with people, because I read a fair amount of news online, and sometimes the response I get is, you know, anything positive, or aren't you focusing too much on the negative? And, you know, I am aware of that, and there's a certain level at which I limit and monitor my intake, so to speak, or reading about world news, because, yeah, I have a threshold of emotional stuff that I like to avoid. But I also think it's important to address the problems, and the only way to do that is to learn about them. A wonderful quote that just summed that up for me when I first read it is by Ludwig Wittgenstein, and it's in a book that All Book Books published by Tilkeson Ghost Horse called Children of the Sun, Prosatry Unplugged. He used the quote at the beginning of the book, and I'm going to read it because, to me, it's the most concise representation of why it's, you know, important or helpful if you so choose, to jump in there and get mucked up and, you know, get your feet wet and deal with some world, the realities going on in the world. And this is the quote: "We must begin with the misrepresentation and transform it into what is true. That is, we must uncover the source of the misrepresentation. Otherwise, hearing what is true won't help us. The truth cannot penetrate when something is taking its place." Ludwig Witt or Wittgenstein. And that's a deep statement. Perhaps true in a spiritual way, as like a Zen students that come up and deal with the master and trying to break through the intellectual barriers that then the truth can penetrate. But anyway, as far as news, the internet is an amazing tool. There's so much out there, and yet, obviously, as we know, it takes a huge filter to know what to read or what to trust. So again, some people say to me, "Well, how do you know that?" And what I'm going to try to explain in this show is some of what has developed for me as a kind of system of finding out information and, to my knowledge, basing it on as much fact as possible and as much trusting in someone. I think that was one of the statements made about Tibetan Buddhism in the show about ways of inference. And there's the direct experience and the inferring and having a reliable guide. So, a trustworthy person. So that's part of where my decisions come from, is somebody, maybe a reporter that nobody's ever heard of, but he is on in the trenches, so to speak, and sometimes literally he is on the front lines. And so that person may have no so-called reputation, but I'm gonna say that this person was there. They talk to people. One writer that comes to mind who's writes a lot about the military-industrial complex and has written about the atrocities and horrors of Vietnam is Nick Terse. And his articles are often anything but terse. He spells it T-U-R-S-E. But in his articles, he interviews people. He'll interview the policeman. He'll interview the hot dog vendor. So you're getting a closer to reality presentation, or a real presentation, rather than, say, some think tank that is spouting statistics that you don't know where the statistics come from. The first kind of overview of reading online is to look at who's presenting it. The mainstream media, corporations have agendas. The way General Electric has a lot invested in munitions and war stuff, they own NBC. So, you're going to see something on NBC that, challenges that. Well, maybe they'll throw the viewer a bone, so to speak, but you're not going to see an outright criticism. So that's the kind of thing to check on a website, is to check who, the mission statement, where it says about us, the sort of board of directors, who are these people? Who do they represent? What are their backgrounds? Look into that. Do your own background checks, because, everything has some agenda, or in a sense, a purpose behind it. I'm not going to hide my own sort of agendas, but I try to be factual and open-minded and fair about it. But when you're reading a website, sometimes, someone may criticize a lot of people, but you say, well, why did they never criticize this group? Well, maybe they have an affiliation. So then it's going to be, a certain bias that helps you put it in perspective. Some of the think tanks, could be connected to corporations or governments or multinationals or organizations. I've learned of a lot of organizations that I barely know about, but Council on Foreign Relations and Bilderberg Group and all these groups that NATO, you look into who's really running the show and what's been going on, and you realize there's some deep agendas, and some of them have been going on for for years, if not hundreds of years. And another thing is to filter, say, with mainstream corporate news like CNN or BBC. You know, they do have good information, but a lot of times it's filtered, and especially during the war on terror, which is still going on, almost every article I've ever read about finding someone from Al-Qaeda capturing someone, it's consistently saying the alleged or the suspected person. So, you know, to me, that's really shoddy journalism. The whole article based on capturing an evil person is all based on alleged. They're admitting that they don't know the facts. So that immediately puts a skepticalness on that, and some of the corporate mainstream media is infamous for that kind of reporting. Another little trick is also, you know, the highlighting of individual stories. There was something, I think, on CNN about the 10th anniversary of Iraq, and it was highlighting maybe one child that was helped or healed or something, and while that's a beautiful story, meanwhile, on a lot of the alternative news sites, it was just a clear depiction of the horrors. 10 years of trillions of dollars and just, you know, death and destruction, post-traumatic stress disorder, harming of the earth, you know, births, deformities, cancer rates, and it just, you know, just infighting in Iraq, divide and conquer. It's really a sad and horrible situation. So sometimes how the corporate media will spin that is to, you know, they'll admit some of that, but they'll show you, you know, a heartwarming story, sort of Hallmark news. So that's a way that your emotions are being sometimes played upon by these news agendas. Now, over the years, and this has been an ongoing process for me and is still ongoing, is learning about news and where to get news. Some of my favorite websites that I check every day, I'm aware that there's a little bit of what's called the left-ternative, which is, you know, we tend to demonize people on the right, the Tea Party, the Republicans, but a lot of the Democrats, so to speak, or the progressive people, there's a certain feeling that they are within the system providing an alternative to the problems, but a lot of people more along the anarchist or self-government line don't want the system itself. So the left alternatives are in sort of simplified terms tend to soften. I can see that with a lot of the people that were disappointed with Obama, you know, after years of thinking he was the answer, and some still do. Realizing he is no better than, and some of his policies have been consistently reported as continuing or worse than his predecessor. So that's another thing to look out for, the sort of the left-ternative, or the progressives that appeal to certain levels of things you like, but yet maybe are not really getting to the whole truth. Now, some of my favorite websites, and they're very popular, they tend to be a conglomeration of articles and news from tons of sources, which is one of the amazing things about the internet. But some of these sites you'll have to check the .com or the .org. I think I'm getting it right, but there's Alternet, A-L-T-E-R, net.org, and commondreams.org. Those two are probably two of the most variety of articles and writers, although they do tend to have the same consistent writers. I think it's sort of a tad clicky in that way. I've sent a few things there and have not gotten into that, but, you know, I haven't pressed it too much. But anyhow, Alternet tends to have more personal or interesting kind of social stories, picking on topics, whether it's sex or drugs or music, and so that adds, you know, a certain appeal rather than just the hardcore news. Common Dreams tend to have more of the current hardcore news. Other sites along those lines, Dissident Voice, which the name says a lot right there, and Counterpunch. They have more hard-hitting, as their title suggests, news stories. And within those, again, within all these sites, you eventually find writers that you like. And we'll get to that in a little while. Another one that just started to scratch the surface, Project Censored. And some other new actual news, video news channels out of Washington, D.C. is RT News. Now, they provide some real open-minded, hard-hitting news. And Real News Network occasionally catch a video of them. And another rather in-depth, scholarly, yet very activist site coming out of Canada is Global Research. It's through them that I found a book, The Global Economic Crisis. Now, I'm aware this show is throwing out tons of names and links and stuff, but that's the nature of the internet. There's no way I'm going to cover it all. So just throwing it out there and, you know, whatever interests someone, they can follow that thread. Democracy Now, I follow a lot, and there's tons of good stuff on there. Interesting interviews with people. They'll spend, you know, an hour actually talking to someone. You know, maybe they'll talk to natives or Cornel West. They'll represent a lot of the minorities. But I do feel that they draw a line, certain things that they just don't seem to go the extra mile and take on or criticize. And from what I've heard, that may have to do with their actual funding coming from somewhere. Again, funding is another thing to look at. Where are these news groups funded from? They could be very liberal and progressive, but perhaps they're being funded by some, you know, think tank that has its hands and its tentacles on the pulse of the society. So they're kind of spoon-feeding or, you know, throwing you a progressive bone, but when it comes to real change in the system, that is another story. Another site that I haven't been checking as much, but over the years, is Prison Planet with Alex Jones, and I like to check them because they tend to come up with breaking stories or unreported stories or get to maybe the reality of what are conspiracy theories with the shooter that was in Connecticut, the Sandy Hook, New Hook, whatever that was called. When at first the news seems to present only the lone gunman story, Prison Planet was probably one of the first putting forward that there were other people on the site that you know were seen in the woods. So they, while they can be a little bit sort of too out there or have their own agenda, they do come up with stories that do present the wider picture, because a lot of facts get left out in the mainstream corporate. Okay, another thing, you know, there's video bits. You can see little news bits that are sometimes 2 to 5 minutes. Sometimes that's an interview, sometimes it's, you know, on the street interview, sometimes it's live stuff, like with the Occupy movement, there was tons of live stream. So we're not just talking literary reading, we're talking, you know, the audio-visual age that we're in, that and actually seeing the people and live and all that, so that's a wonderful thing. And, again, people on location, somebody reporting directly from the site, and also locals. I think local stories are important to keep up with. You know, like the Tao Te Ching says that you can know about what's going on in the world by knowing about what's going on in your home or in your community or in your family, how it starts, you know, one reflects the other. So even by learning a story in your own area, don't overlook the local. Some of the writers, let's see, get to some of the writers that I've come to see their names and almost always want to read them. John Pilcher, he's also a documentary maker, filmmaker. He's got a powerful film about the War You Don't See, I think it's called. He's just like compassionate, honest, but no holds barred, hard-hitting news reporter. Matt Taibbi, he writes for the Rolling Stone. He's written a lot about Wall Street and the shenanigans going on. Naomi Klein, she's pretty well known. Various books she got popular with, No Logo, and then really popular with The Shock Doctrine. Glenn Greenwald, he's written about a lot of the military-industrial stuff. I think it's on Dissident Voice or Counterpunch. Kim Peterson. William Blum, another writer with quite the spread of history. He writes about the Anti-Empire Report, and he's also hard-hitting with a sort of a wry, sarcastic humor. Extremely scholarly and well-researched articles by James Petras. And then another one, sort of one that I recently read about, talk about on the scenes, reporting about the infighting and the sectarianism in Iraq, is Pepe Escobar, E-S-C-O-B-A-R. A couple that I've noticed a lot of articles recently that have been starting to follow them more. Kevin Zeese, Z-E-E-S-E, and Margaret Flowers. There's an Israeli guy, I think, sort of presents the non-Zionist view. I haven't read too much, but his name is Uri Avnery, A-V-N-E-R-Y. A woman also reporting some of the hard stuff related to war is Kathy Kelly. Danny Schechter reports a lot about the media, what's going on there, and also finance, lots of topics. Michael Moore, people are more familiar with, no pun intended. Another reliable writer, I've heard most of his, read most of his stuff having to do with Latin America, is Mark Weisbrot. Almost everybody knows Noam Chomsky. He is consistently, I'd say, almost like weekly or, you know, a couple times a month or something of his online that is always something to learn or remember. Cornel West, I mean, when I watch him speak, it's like, why go to the theater? You can watch Cornel West. Amazingly passionate and insightful person. And a sort of new favorite is on, she's on RT News and also does her own stuff, is Abby Martin. She will get up in the face of the camera and tell some news like it is, which is not what you'll see on the what I call in a poem I wrote about 10 years ago about the news world, media world, is the ever polished milieu. It's just always you know, the makeup, the slick look, everything's always just so polished. Okay, now to get into some categories. Now, everybody, you know, you might have your own favorite categories that you find out about. So a couple of mine are, the first, not as a favorite category in and of itself, is economics. You know, as a poet, artist, mystic type, economics is not really something much of interest, except for the practicality of what we have to deal with in daily life. But as far as understanding what's going on in the world, have developed an interest because everything so much is tied to or has a connection to economics. So those that can explain it in a way that is beyond the almost unintelligible, you know, like a lot that was going on with the economic meltdown in 2008 and the derivatives and the all that stuff. You know, the hedge funds, I read something like that, it's almost unintelligible, but the bunch of writers that really helped me to understand it better, and other people I know that are on similar boat, and they're not always just about economics, they relate things quite well. An excellent writer is Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and he writes about a lot of stuff. Now, he's one of my poster boys in the sense that he worked for the Reagan administration, so... And he's had a kind of turnaround now where he is really railing on and sees the, you know, what is offensive and repressive and fascist about the U.S. empire. And so for someone in the Reagan era to now be writing about that is like, you know, see, look, look at this guy. It's not what you'd expect. I wouldn't agree with everything he says, but in general, I agree with pretty much everything he says. So he's got his own website, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Also kind of a little to the scholarly economic side, Michael Hudson. And there's a young writer named Andrew Gavin Marshall. Another woman, a woman named Ellen Brown. And a website that a friend goes to a lot. I just check it once in a while, Zero Hedge. They have a lot of news bits kind of. Even if you just read a few of the headlines and a few of the blurbs, not the whole article, you can keep up with the basic trends of economics. So you don't have to get really in depth. You can at least know that, oh, say Italy, Spain, Portugal, Greece, they're going through some crazy, uprising and turmoil, and it has to do with the economy and the European Union, yada, yada. So at least you can get some of the basics. And, you know, if you want to learn more, then start reading more in depth and find out who's pulling what strings, what the people are doing, what's going on. And then some real entertaining people you almost have to turn your volume down. Gerald Celente and Max Kaiser, they report the economics, but with a certain flair. Gerald Celente is almost like a sort of psychic guy. He has a track record of predicting a lot of stuff that has happened. Now, sometimes around on the desk, I have a stack of notes. No, not money notes, but writing notes. And I remember reading one article by Paul Craig Roberts, and he summed up that, you know, what's going on with the poor economy. And so when he summed it up, I was like, okay, that's something I want to try to remember. So, you know, if that comes up in discussion or I'm talking with people, I can say, oh, you know, this is what I read that the three main sources are. So what he listed was offshoring and outsourcing of jobs, deregulation, and the military surveillance state. So, you know, most people well know offshoring a lot of jobs, or cheaper jobs are going to China, India, wherever. And deregulation has to do with the whole economy bust, how instead of a bank being a bank, it became, you know, a casino, really. A lot of the economy is like a casino. And then the military surveillance state, how here we are in this supposed economic crisis where there's all these cutbacks, and yet, you know, the military surveillance state is booming, really. So, again, writers like this that help to summarize, it's really like, I kind of look at it, there's only so much thinking or brain power or organizing of ideas and what's going on that I personally can do. So finding the ones that really sum up the best, helps me enjoy the rest of my day better. Learned a lot over the years is the indigenous category, and that's especially significant because the more I've learned about that, the more I've realized that that's really literally been squelched out of the history books and the educational system, on the news, on TV, of course, mainstream media, except for, you know, seeing the stereotypical native in a headdress or dancing at a powwow, you're barely ever, if at all, going to see them representing themselves, and especially in this land, Turtle Island, and also around the world. Another amazing thing about the internet, as people well know, is videos and articles. You can, you know, catch up with people from all countries and places around the world. Probably the best site for news online is Censored News with Brenda Norell, who worked for many, many years, even with Indian newspapers, and found at a certain point a few years ago, her stories were being censored. So she developed her own site, and it's a real treasure. A lot of the censored news stories are about what's going on the front lines. I mean, people think that, a lot of think that what happens with the Native Americans and has to do with the past. But, you know, there's a lot of the protests going on. People are becoming more aware of the tar sands, which is really bringing together the natives and the non-native allies, really for the first time, working together to protect Mother Earth. And Censored News is really shows you specific stories. There was a story about a 28-year-old Lakota, who sacrificed his life to save some children. I think tourists were in a lake or something. He dove in to save the kids, and that just a powerful story. It talked about how he was brought up and raised as a warrior, quote, warrior, the psychology and lifestyle of what that means to defend one's people, care for people. So, you know, here's a story that in the mainstream culture would be all over the place, but simply because it has to do with a people that have been, shunned and their culture repressed, from the mainstream, you won't hear anything about it unless, you know, you look elsewhere. So, another fabulous, as far as radio, as I've probably mentioned a few times and had Teokas and Ghost Horse on this show, is First Voices Indigenous Radio. That's, you know, interviews and news and some music. And Teokasin talks a lot about, you know, really brings things up to date and presents things from a world view with Indigenous, as well as activism and what one can do and how to raise one's consciousness and learn about the language, really learn about the culture. You know, sometimes like giving money to a place helps, but it's more than just throwing money at the problem. These are deeper problems that take a lot to really change and heal. And get over the post-traumatic stress disorder, which I've learned from studying and talking to Indigenous people, is that, you know, the post-traumatic stress disorder has a sort of historical, cultural thing that generations of people that go through trauma, then, you know, it's a residual thing that needs to be healed. And so talking about it and sharing really helps. Another aspect, in general, I talked before about the war of terror, really, and the alleged suspected, the shoddy journalism, is the slander and disrespect and lies that happened, that most prominently with the passing of Hugo Chavez, and how a lot of news sites, you know, just sort of presented it, well, he did this good, but, or even though he was like this, you know, you could almost hear the tone of the article right from the get-go. And some outright, you know, disgustingly disrespectful of, you know, number one, a human being, and number two, someone who just did tremendous amounts to help his country and his people. And I probably read about 20 articles, you know, on him within, a few days or a week, because it's something important to me, especially that area of the world. So you can look up a lot of the positives about what Chavez has done and continues to do from the spiritual side. But, you know, people say, well, why? Why is this a problem? Why is this happen? And, I mean, the gist of it is that Chavez was one of the first to stand up to the mainstream, to the corporate culture, to the petrochemical oligarchy or oiligarchy. And he nationalized the oil, so the people in the country could get the money instead of it going to multinational corporations. And he used that money to help the people, to build houses for the poor and to have social programs. So that, in a nutshell, is why he got and gets bad-mouthed, because the corporate media has an agenda, and you know that agenda is to convince you of certain things. One of which is to, you know, buy your gas and go shopping and think about people in this way. Yeah, a lot of these topics are kind of, you know, they push the rant button, but I'm trying to cover it, give this general overview of the of my experience searching the web and finding news. Oh yeah, another key thing is it's sort of like a routine that I have of checking certain sites, and within these sites scanning the headlines, really. That's probably the simplest method, if I may call it that, is just scanning the headlines and seeing what grabs me or what sounds interesting. You know, in a way, this may sound shallow, but because, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover or the article by its headline, but a lot of times the headline is really, you know, does say what the article is about. And so it's sort of like I have a predisposition to certain things, but again, everybody's got their categories and specialties that they want to learn about. But it is a way to take what seems, you know, a mountain of information and get to the molehill, I suppose, is to, because it is daunting, especially sometimes when I've shown people new on a computer just even how to look up or web search. It's amazing how much, you know, between the ads and the information and the links, it's overwhelming. So to try to simplify it and just simply look at the headlines or look for the you know, the authors or whatever, or the categories. Sometimes things are in categories like world news, and that will help focus in. A favorite website, and I'm actually the resident poet, and I contribute essays too, so I'm letting you know that before I say what a wonderful website it is Axis of Logic. Subtitle, Finding Clarity in the 21st Century Mediaplex. One thing about the website that I appreciate is that the news is, it's a bit slower paced. The news is not just thrown up there every day, trying to keep up with every story. The editors take time. They take time to look over the news and make a sort of rational or relational choice about what to present. Because, you know, sometimes when you throw up, sort of no pun intended, but maybe not, when you throw up news really quick on your website and then find out, whoops, that was some false information, you know, you have to backtrack and then have to write, you know, maybe twice as much to kind of cover your ass. So, you know, Axis of Logic takes its time with a lot of news stories, and so you know that what's up there has been thought about and is trying to present a, you know, a wider, really get-to-the-gist view. And that's the website where I found the phrase global corporate empire, which to me is a sums up, you know, in a nutshell, a lot of the shenanigans that go on in the world. Is that it's not just this country or that country, but it's connected, a global corporate empire. So, you know, part of the web search is looking for the needles in the haystacks. I find that helpful in anything. I mean, there's a Pink Floyd song where in a few lyrics it kind of sums up the essence of world bullshit. I'm remembering it now. With, without, and who'll deny, that's what the fighting's all about. With, without, who'll deny, that's what the fighting's all about. You know, the haves and the have-nots. I mean, that in itself sums up a tremendous amount of stuff. Another thing about Axis of Logic, because the editor, Les Blau, he's in Venezuela, and so there's a highlight on Latin America. And which, again, over through this website and other websites, I've learned a lot about that particular area, which is, you know, a lot of countries, Bolivia, Ecuador, Venezuela, they're really at the forefront of social democracy and really making change and breaking away from the global corporate empire. So, that's become a strong interest for me. And let's see, some other... Then there's maybe some writers that are just, you know, that talk about personal things or talk about what's going on in the world, but are also just... The writing is interesting, and one of the ones that comes to mind is Phil Rockstrow. He's a poet and an artist, and just he presents just some amazing writing, and... he gets past some of that newsiness and just reporting to touch the, you know, emotional content, remind us all that we're, you know, we are human beings dealing with these problems. It's not just, you know, it's cut and dried news, but that's part of the problem of the corporate news, is that it tries to present this world that's cut and dry. And we have to remember and seemingly continually stay in touch with the emotional, the raw, things. Someone I emailed with said that, you know, he was hearing about Iraq, the anniversary, and kind of almost had a, you know, breakdown of emotion. And I know when I read some of what the report of Iraq 10 years later, it's just, you know, I had that mix of sadness and outrage, that it reminded me to, I like to kind of keep that in my consciousness in a way. Not try to forget about it, not try to dwell on it, but to keep it in the you know, unless it's a topic that's, you know, sort of one of my causes to speak up and consistently remind people about, but to keep it in the consciousness and awareness and almost keep a certain level of healthy anger about it, because it helps to fuel action and to decide how to make change. And otherwise, I think we become like, you know, Gore Vidal quipped, the United States of Amnesia, where we don't want to know and we forget. But then, you know, it's a rude awakening. It's a rude awakening to suddenly realize, you know, here it is, 10 years later, and I just saw, you know, pictures of deformed babies in a report about Iraq. And again, the trillions of dollars, the destruction, you know, to read the news and see that this was based on lies, and yet years and destruction and just deliberate. How else can I think about it except to say that this is deliberate, calculated. You know, maybe it's just idiocy, but, you know, how does that get dealt with? And it does. It starts to push the emotional button. So, emailing with that person online, it reminded me that, you know, to keep a certain level of emotional charge about these things helps me to not go nuts when all of a sudden I do hear such a story. Another wonderful writer is Chris Hedges. He's also written some books, and he writes from a very, you know, man on the street, theological, journalistic perspective. As mentioned before, Nick Turse, T-U-R-S-E, he's one of the premier ones for exposing the waste and shenanigans of the monstrosity of the military-industrial complex. Did a show on his book, The Complex. Arundhati Roy from India, I think she is, and she has a lot to say about what's going on in the world. Vandana Shiva. Oh yeah, that's another big topic today is the food sources. Vandana Shiva, and you know, she addresses a lot of the problems with Monsanto, the GMOs. She started a seed program of actually collecting seeds and storing them to help preserve the food traditions. So that's another big topic over the last, say, five. I noticed it about 5 or 7 years ago, all of a sudden, just articles about food almost every day. And I was reading them and learning and sending them to a friend who writes a food column and knows a lot about food, and, you know, who I call if I want to know, you know, how do I freeze the string beans? But, you know, seriously, it's a topic. You notice the topics come up and you start to follow them and realize this is an issue. And over the years, it has become a bigger issue because the corporations have tried to, agribusinesses have started to dominate food production in an industrial way. So the internet is a great way to keep up with what's going on and changes in the world and to follow topics that grab you. That's pretty much though, really an overview. And, you know, again, if there's a way to balance this, one's own insights. Sometimes there's really a need to just step away from it all and just, you know, contemplate what's going on and get one's own insights into the world and the cosmos and connect with nature and do whatever it takes to not get overly high-strung, caught up with the news. But it's a delicate balance. Another little trick, sometimes I just randomly look, you know, I'm just sitting around, have a coffee and don't know what to do and just kind of, oh, I'll just randomly check the website or I'll randomly check some, you know, BBC headlines or something. And that often leads to a story or a place. And another thing that happens is that the linking, the networking, it's really the wheels within wheels thing where, read an article and the article will lead to an author or the author will mention a storyline or something that happened in history or a website or a video or a documentary. So, you know, even somebody's bio, an author's bio, they'll link to that website and, you know, it goes on and on and on. That's the beauty and sometimes the danger, but, you know, you have to navigate it, of the internet is, you know, finding these things, but being aware that one thing leads to another, a friend may know of a site, may recommend, or, you know, it's an ongoing process. So that's another sort of under the radar way of networking. And also not just in a news way, but the ability to research online. When I was writing epic poem, singing in an epic of peace, I got into researching all the names of the United States and discovering that over half of them were named after Indian tribes or places. That got me into a huge research project. So again, that the wonderful tool that the internet provides, you know, that got into a bit of history and helped me to realize that, to discover that a lot of native tribes or nations have their own websites. So even doing a history or research project can lead to the present. And another part of that research was that certain things were not definitive, so it required me to look for five or six sometimes sources. And I even, you know, I put that in the book. Sometimes when it was clear that this is where the name came from, that would be the information. And if there were five or six sources with no definitive answer, it would be, well, maybe it was this, maybe it was this, maybe it was this. So, you know, at least it presents the info to the reader and they can decide. So that's an ongoing process. Another way that the networking works is sharing articles. When you know a friend or, you know, has a particular interest in a topic, send them the article, send them the link. I think people do that. That happens all the time, but it is a way of helping to inform each other, raise consciousness, raise awareness, really be the true democracy of information that the internet can provide. So that's really an overview and some specifics of Between the Bylines, and just kind of by exploring and, you know, checking things is. And following instincts and intuitions and personal interests and global interests and whatever is the gist of how I learned to surf the web and learn some shit. And I put that in there to kind of downplay any presumptuousness that I know too much, or also to realize that a lot of the news is shit, and it takes help to acknowledge that helps me deal with it. So feel free to, if you come across some interesting website or author or article or something, feel free to email me, let me know. I'm always interested in expanding the awareness and the consciousness about what's going on. And as a writer, also have come to see how, you know, sometimes a news article or a documentary or the video news will hit a topic, and I'll write a poem about it right away. There was a program on Democracy Now! About the Predator drones, and that got into a poem. And another thing with my essay writing is I noticed sort of over a period of time, it's like all these news stories and things are going into a hopper, and at a certain point, something just clicks, and you know, the stories connect, the dots connect into some kind of theme, and that becomes a topic for an essay. So as a writer, whether it's essays or even fiction, you know, you realize you're some part of you is assessing or taking in bits of all the news that can then form into, whether it's a character in a story that knows about this, or you're presenting a historical background to your fiction or whatever it is. It feeds the creative and writing process. So, well, that feels like about it for this. And I hope you enjoyed the overview. And again, I know I realize people may have to sort of put the stop button, pause button, say, what was the name of that author? What was the name of that website? If it's something you can't remember and you don't want to go back and listen, just feel free to email me, and I'll try to remember or answer what specific person you were talking about. Greg Palast, Palast, is another wonderful investigative journalist. Something that in itself is hardly ever heard of nowadays, where journalism a lot of times has become a 9-to-5, just sort of dial it in job, and a lot of online stuff is quotes from other people's articles, which also reminds of Jeremy Scahill. He started with Democracy Now!, and he's got some books. Again, these people that write online, you can also read their books. He wrote about Blackwater, the mercenary organization that changed its name to XE. And Greg has some wonderful inside info about the oil conglomerates and, again, the global corporate empire. So all this stuff feeds different levels of you know, interconnections, and a lot of times these people too are connected to artists and poets and, you know, musicians, and so it all there is a sort of can be an entertainment value that's connected to this hardcore info. So I'm going to go out with a song by one of the early on hip-hop groups called Public Enemy, and this is a song called Shut 'Em Down. So take care and have a good one.
Shut 'em down. All right, y'all, one more time. Here we go.